Welcome to the Product Podcast, brought to you by Product School. Here, you'll get fresh insight from the people at the very top of the tech companies who make the products we love. Remember, you can learn product management live online. Visit productschool.com to discover our new certificate path. There, you can also join the world's largest community of PMs and network with the leaders from these podcasts at our online events. There's something happening almost every day.
Hi there. If you've been wondering about how to communicate effectively with executives who have limited time and patience, you've come to the right place. This is a presentation about exactly that. We'll be going over some big picture ideas about how to structure your communications and how to think about the process. My name is Vince, and I've been a product manager at Google for the past 10 years. And currently, I'm based in our offices in Zurich, Switzerland. Well, first of all, credit where credit is due. The ideas here are from many great minds, and so I want to acknowledge and thank my mentors, former bosses, colleagues, and other amazing product managers who I've learned from over the years. I want to start with our goals. What's the purpose of effectively communicating with busy executives? I'd like to convince you that the ultimate purpose at the exec levels is to motivate action. Maybe you want resources. Maybe you need alignment. Maybe you need some runway. Whatever it is, it's useful to jump into the shoes of the executive. What does their day look like? We'll talk more about this, but to start with, executives are extremely pressed for time. They run from one meeting to another. They make decisions with minimal to no time to prepare. While at the working level, product managers and their cross-functional teams are accustomed to pre-read maybe long and nuanced documents. That does not work for executives. They simply don't have the time. Preparing for exec review meetings is something product managers do all of the time, of course. There's nothing as sad as seeing a product manager get derailed in a meeting, run out of time before going through what they really wanted to go through, and then they get kicked out of the conference room. That has certainly happened to me. Now, it's not a stretch to say that an exec is most often the least informed person in the room, no matter what the topic is. It's just impossible to spend enough time on any particular topic when you're at that vantage point. So what is the busy executive's thought process then? Well, here I present to you a simple flowchart that has proven true for me. Well, first things first, is this an important topic? If not, should we be doing something else? Second, does it seem like the right people are working on it? If not, new leaders are probably needed. And finally, do I agree with the next steps? If not, probably the best course of action is to send the folks back to try again. And if yes, approve the situation and move on to the next topic. The point is that at an exec's level, almost everything is a trust and leadership problem. They either trust you to get it done or they change leadership. They certainly don't have the time to do it themselves. So, how do busy executives answer the questions in the flowchart? Well, they are listening for key things that make them believe in both your vision and your leadership ability to get it done. Demonstrating all that requires going into the details and data, of course. But before we get too much into the weeds, it's useful to consider the bigger buckets. Vision. Does the team know where they are going and how they will get there? Alignment. Do stakeholders agree? You know, as an executive, would I agree with the direction? Ability. Do I trust these people that are working on this project? Do they have the capability to execute and to make progress? Need. What do they need from me to continue and to be successful? Is it simply endorsement? Is it more resources? Now, so far, I haven't talked about any communication tips just yet. You might be wondering whether communication skills makes a difference. Well, let me start with a rather silly example. Here we have a stream of consciousness, right? John Connor called to say that he can't make the meeting at 3 o'clock. Kyle Reese says he doesn't mind making it later or even tomorrow, but not before 10:30. And meanwhile, Kate's admin says that Brewster won't return from NYC until tomorrow late. The conference room is booked tomorrow, but free Thursday. Thursday at 11 looks to be a good time. Is that okay for you? Wow. I think a natural response to a paragraph like this is probably, what did I just read? Now, let's look at structuring this better. Could we reschedule today's meeting to Thursday at 11 o'clock? This would be more convenient for John and Kyle. It would also permit Kate to be present. It is also the only other time this week that the conference room is free. Now, what just happened? Well, we put the conclusion or the question up front. No preamble, no long buildup. All of that comes afterwards as supporting material. Now, visually, we might represent things like this. To communicate in a structured way with a busy executive, you start with the answer to the executive's question first, and then list your supporting arguments. This top-down structure is counterintuitive for many of us, because we like to talk about the process of which we got to the answer. Right? So for many people, it's natural to build up to the conclusion, if you will, by first reciting all the facts, recounting all of the analyses that have been done, or reviewing all of the supporting ideas. Then, only after you've talked about all that, you get to the punchline. So this silly example would visually look like this. Right? So you have the answer at the very beginning, rescheduled to Thursday, 11 o'clock, and then you have the reasons underneath. Now, let's look at something that you might imagine seeing at work. Okay, so when we look at the company sales data, we see that there has been a decline over the years. We also face increased competition, even though we introduced new features 2 years ago and we launched a product. These new features required a new factory to be built, which also increased costs. We have to increase market share to attain an economy of scale. Again, the natural response to this is, what did I just read, right? What is the action here? Okay, well, let's fix this. This would be a much better structured way of doing it. You start with the punchline. To regain profitability, we have to improve market share by cutting prices. Right? And then you add the supporting material. Lower prices will increase sales. Lower prices versus competitors will increase our market share. And finally, increased volume helps us create economies of scale. Right? So everything sort of makes sense. Now, this may look simple and obvious, but establishing clarity in the punchline takes practice to do well. Consider the difference between the two statements here. The first one is something that seems reasonable at first glance. And I've done things like this where I say, I want to update the leadership on the progress, right? And what is missing is that the action you want to motivate. So what is it that you want to achieve? The second sentence here is much better, right? The goal is much clearer. And sometimes, you really just want to give an update, which is fine. But still, I challenge that the action could be to, for example, endorse the plan, to proceed as planned. Okay, so I realize all of this seems rather obvious. And, when you put things side by side, it seems like, well, obviously, you would present things in a much clearer way, right? So are there concrete steps to get from before to after? In fact, yes. This is what this next section is about. Let me show you three steps that will up your game. Now, to follow the principles that I just talked about, I'll go straight to the answer. Right, so step one, start with the answer first. Step two, group and summarize your supporting arguments. And step three, logically structure your writing. Let's jump right into step one. When an executive asks you a question, what should we do? You start your response with, you should do X, very crisply and directly. That's the way to do it. Now, only then, after you've answered, should you present your supporting ideas. Why? Well, first, you want to maximize your time with an exec audience. Executives are busy, they are perpetually short on time, and they're used to processing lots of information quickly. And they obviously get impatient when they feel like something or someone isn't getting to the point. To get most of your short time with an executive, you want to make your recommendation first and foremost. In some cases, the executive may already mentally be at the conclusion you want them to reach, in which case, they'll just accept your recommendation and move on, in which case, problem solved. Second, many executives often think in a top-down manner. They want to focus on the big picture. And in this case, the big picture means the answer. They want to get bogged down by details, right? By delivering your recommendation in the answer-first format, you are fitting into the executive's mental model and allowing them to quickly process your recommendation. finally, I found that you're a lot more persuasive when you're just direct, right? By answering the executive's question first, you sound more assertive and confident. You're not searching for reasons or words. You're not wavering. You're just directly answering the question. And that's what executives enjoy and want. Now, there are a few things that are important to consider in this step. First of all, are you sure you're answering the right question? Bear in mind that your perspective and the exec's perspective on things could be vastly different. For instance, you know, while you're looking at a house, they may be looking at an entire city. It's important to calibrate your answer with their perspective and understand the context for the question. Another way of thinking about this is, how do you keep the exec's attention when you're answering? People in general only engage when they're learning, laughing, or disagreeing with you. So it's a useful way of thinking from the exec's point of view. Now, that may seem a little bit abstract, so let me go through an example of an answer that goes from bad to good. The first answer here isn't super useful. We are concerned about meeting the new manufacturing standards. This is basically just what everyone knows already. And then it progresses down to become better and better, right? We should take steps to meet the new manufacturing standards, which begs the question, well, what steps? We can change our processes to meet the new manufacturing standards. Well, the obvious question would be, well, in what way? And finally, as we get to 4 and 5, we're getting to the details now. We should devote extra resources to full-time heads now to redesign our processes to meet the new manufacturing standards. This is very clear now. We could do this even better, though, if we add the deadline at the very end. So the last example here is a very good summary, and a good punchline. All right, so let's move on to step 2, which is to group and summarize your supporting arguments. Our audience, whether they're listening or they're reading, will naturally begin to group and summarize your arguments and ideas in order to remember them. So you might as well help them do it and make your overall recommendation more effective and memorable. In the diagram that we used before, the key is that ideas form a pyramid shape, if you will, under a single thought. The single thought is the answer to the executive's question. And underneath that single thought, you're supposed to group and summarize the next level of supporting ideas and arguments. Then, for each supporting idea and argument, you can go even further, right? So it's a recursive thing where you talk about the supporting arguments and you have a level underneath until you get to all of your arguments. Now, for folks who've been in consulting, this will look very familiar. This is called the pyramid principle. The idea is that at any level in the pyramid, there must be a summary of the ideas grouped below them. Now, it turns out that there are two major ways to group ideas. And this may not be super intuitive, so it's good to walk through them. The first way of grouping ideas is deductive reasoning. Deduction is the reasoning process of drawing a logical conclusion from general arguments. So for the example that we have here, hey, birds fly, I'm a bird. Well, I'm a bird, therefore I fly. Makes sense, right? Now, another way to draw logical conclusions is by inductive reasoning. And this takes specific information and makes a broader generalization. The conclusion of an inductive argument is considered to be only probable because you are listing out the evidence underneath, which may not be exhaustive. Now, that may seem like a flaw, but a great advantage of using induction for arguments is that the reader can easily follow since the conclusion is clear from the very beginning. So the inductive reasoning is therefore recommended for making arguments in the top part of your pyramid. Now, here is a visual comparison of the two ways of grouping ideas. As mentioned on the left, a deductive takes the user on a journey, right? A leads to B, leads to C, and therefore we arrive at D, right? Inductive reasoning states the answer up front. The answer is D, and it's supported by A, B, and C, right? So you see the difference between the two. Now, this is important, so it's worth repeating. I wrote this all out. Now, given a choice, use induction rather than deduction because it is easier for the reader to absorb It's less effort to comprehend. The tendency with folks is to want to present your thinking in the order that you developed it, which is generally a deductive process. Here's an example to illustrate the difference. Now, this is the deductive example, and it's actually very well structured, right? So we use three criteria to judge whether to buy a warehouse. You know, it's A, B, and C. This building meets those criteria. So therefore, we should buy, right? So it makes a lot of logical sense. Now, in contrast, here is what the logic looks like if we structure this in the inductive way. So here, we state the recommendation upfront. Buy the Pacific Avenue warehouse because it meets our criteria. And here is our criteria. It's on a corner. It's larger than 5,000 square feet. It's under $10 a square foot. As you can see, it's much clearer when information and recommendations are structured this way. Now, there are a few additional things to consider as you go through step two. First, it just so happens that the magic number of ideas in a group is three. Right? I'm sure there is scientific reasoning behind it, but you know what I found is that whenever you're trying to persuade a senior person to do something, always present three reasons, not two, not four, three. I'll just say that, you know, whenever I force myself to structure in this way, I've gotten people's attention, and I sound like I know what I'm talking about. So it has worked for me. The other thing to consider is whether your thoughts are structured logically. And one test is whether the ideas truly belong together and nothing has been left out. This is called mutually exclusive, collectively exhaustive. Now, this is what it might look like visually if things aren't working, you know, very well. For example, if your ideas are not mutually exclusive, you risk confusing the audience. They might wonder, hey, you know, haven't you listed the same thing already? Like, isn't there some overlap? When your ideas aren't collectively exhaustive, your audience starts wondering what is missing. Hey, there's obviously a big piece missing here. Are there other things that you are missing? And you don't want that to derail the conversation. All right, finally, we get to step three, which is logically structuring your writing. You want to ensure that the ideas you bring together under each group actually belong together, are at the same level of importance, and follow some logical structure. There are a few ways of logically ordering ideas that belong in the same group. For example, you could do the time order, right? If there's a sequence of events that form a cause and effect relationship, you should present the ideas in time order. Another way of structuring is the structural order. Break a singular thought down into its parts, and you ensure that it's covering all the major supporting ideas. And finally, there's also a degree order. Okay? You can present supporting ideas in rank order of importance, most to least importance. Now, the overarching issue, though, is everyone loves a good story, and execs are no exception. And it turns out that stories always follow the same pattern. You know, there's a situation, right? There's a complication or a problem, and there's a key question that you want to answer. And finally, it is answered and everyone is happy. So your introduction should be structured exactly like a story. Right? In practice, this is what it might look like. Right? The introduction starts with a situation, what the audience would agree to be true. It anchors the audience in a specific time and space, and the chronology is clear. So just like you do with stories, it's the same with business matters as well. So every business story ever told that I've seen follows this pattern. You got situation, complication, question, and answer. The situation answers, hey, what are we talking about? Where's the starting point for the discussion? The complication answers, why are we talking about this? Like, why now? Like, what's the big deal? Right? And then there is usually a question. You know, there's a question that we want to get answered. And finally, what is the answer? State it up front. What's the key point? Now, all of this may sound a little vague, I realize. So let's look at a few examples. Now, here's an example of what it might look like if you're doing a pitch. So in this situation, as you know, work in our apartment has increased 20% a year. Nevertheless, in line with HQ policy, who have kept the headcount at just 14 heads. The result has been overtime and we can work, et cetera. So what is the complication? The complication is that we need to bring this to your attention now because the backlog has now reached 22 weeks. The field is finding that unacceptable and we got to do something about it. And what is the question? Well, should I approve this? And the answer is yes, please approve. Now, here's an example of what it might look like if you're choosing among alternatives. And this happens a lot when you have options that you're looking at. So in this case, the situation is this. The recent ruling that a 300 horsepower motor is the most efficient for drilling oil in cold temperatures has led our largest customer to announce that he will switch from using a 200 horsepower motor to our competitor's model. Okay, well, what's the complication? Well, we've got three possible responses. We can A, cut the prices. We can B, re-engineer the engine to be 300 horsepower. And three, we can purpose design a new motor. Okay. So what's the question? The question is, well, which alternative would make sense? And the answer could be any one of them, depending on the situation. All right, so here is an example of what you might do if this was an update, right? So the situation in this example is this. In our last progress review, we told you that we have a capacity problem. It's a complication. Well, you said you thought that this would not be a problem for long because you believe the competition is shortly going out of business. You asked us to investigate, and now we've completed our investigation. The question is, well, what did we find? The answer is, in this case, unfortunately, well, you still have a problem. Okay, so that was the three steps. So let's wrap up and review some of the key tips that I've gone over. First, it's important to keep the executive's thought process in mind. And as mentioned, at their level, almost everything is a trust and leadership problem. They either will trust you to get it done or change leadership, right? So this is a very high level way of thinking about this. To communicate in a structured way, with a busy executive, you should start with the answer to the executive's question first, and then list your supporting arguments. This top-down structure, as I've mentioned, will feel unnatural, but practice makes perfect. Now, as you get more practice, you may start noticing patterns in communication as well. Now, the specific topic may be different. The way you create the storyline might be similar. So here are a few common patterns, an action plan, explain how to solve a problem, the pitch that I mentioned before, choosing among alternatives, updates, and a useful way of framing this is usually red, green, yellow across projects. All right, well, let me end with some further reading that might be useful if you're interested in this. The first one here is the Minto Pyramid Principle. It's a classic by Barbara Minto. It goes over many of these concepts and has benefited me a lot. The second example here is the So What strategy. This is a newer book that talks about patterns and the classic storylines you could leverage for your communication. And I found that to be very useful too. All right, well, thank you very much. I hope this has been very useful.
Thank you for listening to the Product Podcast. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. For more product insights, head over to productschool.com.